Welcome to The Bridge, a twice-weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. This morning, we'll hear about the federal government shutdown. Some won't notice anything different. Others are already experiencing the effects of the closures. Also on the show, testing the potency of pot. Yes, there are people paid to do that.
I think one time we had tomato bisque soup with cornbread, and I think it came out pretty potent.
And insurance exchanges are set to open today under the Affordable Care Act. Oregon's online system still has some glitches, but information is available on the web and in local health departments. In Washington, all systems are go. This is Coast Community Radio. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgane. Closed national parks will be one of the first visible effects of the partial government shutdown beginning today. National Forest and BLM campgrounds will close too. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports real people are already feeling the impact.
The temporary closure of national parks throughout the West is forcing lots of people to revise their plans. The timing of the federal shutdown caused particular frustration at a Portland alternative public school. They've been planning a three-night field trip to Crater Lake National Park for the past 6 months. Metropolitan Learning Center teacher Ned Haskell says the trip can't be rescheduled easily.
After this date, the snow starts to fall. It's too risky to take children up there any later in the season.
Haskell says the 104 students and about 45 adults are determined to salvage what they can of their planned trip. They moved their base camp to a state park in southern Oregon. He says the 4th, 5th, and 6th graders are learning a lot more about the different branches of government than originally envisioned. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
In northwest Oregon and southwest Washington, Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, Fort Clatsop, the Julia Butler Hansen Refuge for the Columbian White-tailed Deer, the Mount St. Helens Volcanic National Monument are among the federal parks feeling the effects of the closures. Separately, the federal science agency NOAA plans to recall two West Coast-based research ships in mid-cruise. Via email, a NOAA spokeswoman said the NOAA ship Rainier will take 5 days to return to its home port in Newport, Oregon from Alaska. The Fairweather, another large survey and research ship, is being recalled to Newport from California waters. Federal prison guards, federal law enforcement, airport screeners, and air traffic controllers have been exempted from the shutdown. Amtrak says it can continue normal operations for a while, relying on ticket revenue, but will suffer without federal subsidies over the longer term. Social Security and Medicare benefits still keep coming, though some offices may be closed. School lunches and breakfasts will continue to be served, and food stamps, known as the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, will still be distributed. The Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, known as WIC, could shut down. It provides supplemental food, health care referrals, and nutrition education for pregnant women, mothers, and their children. Unemployment benefit checks will continue for now, but Washington state officials are uncertain if the checks will continue if the shutdown lasts a week or more. Most Department of Veterans Affairs services will continue. 95% of staff are either exempted from a shutdown or have the budget to keep paying them already in place. The department's health programs get their money a year in advance, so veterans can still see their doctor, get prescriptions filled, and visit fully operational VA hospitals and outpatient clinics. Claims workers can process benefit payments until late this month when that money starts to run out. The National Weather Service is also considered essential and will continue operating normally. Members of Congress weren't the only ones working late into the evening yesterday. State lawmakers in Oregon stayed late as they tried to keep a deal on taxes and public pensions alive. A special session that was planned to last one day is instead going to resume this morning. Salem correspondent Chris Lehman reports.
Want to know what Monday's special session sounded like? Here's a taste.
The House will stand in recess until 3:30 p.m.
And so you come back at 3:30, eager for some legislative action, and...
The House will stand in recess until 4 p.m.
It was pretty much like that all day. Rumors flew around the building that the deal worked out between Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber and four top legislative leaders was on again, off again. Lobbyists and interest groups milled around, trying to get a sense of what was actually going on. Jim Glass was one of a number of public workers who visited the Capitol in a last-ditch effort to block cuts to the retirement pensions. Glass has worked at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality for 35 years.
If I could afford to get out, I would.
Glass says he's done the math. He says it wouldn't be so bad if his cost of living increases were reduced for a couple of years, but he says it's the compound effect over many years of retirement that has him worried.
It isn't very many years before it starts to fall off to where I can no longer afford to be retired or to get by after retirement.
By late afternoon, the pendulum seemed to swing back in favor of getting the deal through. Lawmakers took public testimony into the evening. Many expressed opposition to the measures. Others voiced support. Portland attorney Lisa Nato praised lawmakers for including a cigarette tax increase that would generate tens of millions of dollars for mental health programs. She says her mentally ill brother would benefit.
I want to thank you for your coming together in a bipartisan manner to make a substantial step forward to fund adequately mental health services so that people like my brother will be able to lead a dignified life.
The package includes other targeted tax hikes as well as a few tax cuts for certain businesses. Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber has said that he won't sign any of the special session bills unless lawmakers pass all of them. I'm Chris Lehman in Salem.
The Associated Press reports another part of yesterday's dispute stemmed from a disagreement over when a bill that would prohibit local governments from regulating genetically modified crops would take effect. Republicans wanted to include a so-called emergency clause that would allow it to take effect immediately, preventing critics from collecting signatures to call a referendum at the ballot box or to approve more local ordinances that would be grandfathered in. When the bill was finally introduced, it did include the emergency clause. As lawmakers met privately, critics held a news conference to denounce plans to prohibit local regulations of seeds and seed products. The measure is an attempt to supersede emerging efforts by environmentalists and organic food proponents to ban genetically modified crops at the county level in response to what they see as a lack of action by the state and federal governments. Ivan Molesky, director of Friends of Family Farmers, told the Associated Press, quote, "Agricultural regulations have no place in a complex deal over pensions and taxes. This is backroom politics at its worst. Frankly, the legislature and the governor should be embarrassed by the way this is moving forward," close quote. Governor Kitzhaber had hoped to smooth out the differences ahead of the session and finish in a day. Today now appears to be the earliest possible adjournment. You're listening to The Bridge. In top stories from the Associated Press this morning, Oregonians will have to wait to enroll for health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. Officials said late yesterday that Cover Oregon, the state's insurance marketplace that was supposed to go live today, is still experiencing glitches. The online system is not correctly determining eligibility for tax credits, the Oregon Health Plan, and Healthy Kids. The problem is expected to be resolved later in the month. Beginning today, Oregonians can find certified insurance agents or community organizations to help start the process, and they can browse through insurance options and price estimates, but nobody will be able to enroll in coverage until the problems are fixed. Clatsop County citizens will have local agents to help them navigate the new program. Judy Mahoney, an outreach coordinator with the County Public Health Department, is a certified enrollment assistance agent and can help county residents find insurance through Cover Oregon. A special appointment line has been set up at the County Public Health Office at 503-338-3684. Coastal Family Health Center in Astoria is also a certified Cover Oregon assistance provider. All enrollment assistance is provided at no cost. Spanish language assistance is also available. Details and enrollment assistance phone numbers can also be found on our webpage at coastradio.org. Click the news button on the homepage. Individuals have until December 15th to enroll for coverage that begins January 1st. The first enrollment period starts today and runs for 6 months. Starting next year, most Americans who don't have health insurance could face fines. Washington State's new health insurance marketplace does open for business today. Washington's system went online at 7:30 this morning via telephone. People can also ask questions in person at locations around the state. State officials say they're ready and waiting for customers to call, sign on, or stop by. The state estimates about 1 million Washington residents don't have health insurance, or about 1 in 7 people. The state hopes to enroll 130,000 people for health insurance in 2014 and another 280,000 in 2015. Another 325,000 people in Washington will be eligible to sign up for free insurance through Medicaid. Washington State's minimum wage will increase 13 cents to $9.32 per hour starting on New Year's Day. The state's current rate of $9.19 an hour is already the highest state minimum wage in the nation. The state's Department of Labor and Industries announced the new wage yesterday. Washington's minimum wage is adjusted each year for inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index for the past 12 months ending on October 31st, which is up 1.45%. The year The recalculation is required by Initiative 688, which was approved by Washington voters in 1998. The attorney representing a coalition of parents and education groups that sued Washington State over school funding says it's time for the Supreme Court to get tough with lawmakers. In a filing to the court yesterday, attorney Thomas Ahern asked the court to warn elected state officials that they face sanctions, a holding of contempt, or some appropriate judicial enforcement if they don't stop dragging their feet on spending more state dollars on education. The filing follows an update from the legislature in August on its progress toward fulfilling a court order to fix the way Washington pays for K-12 education. In January of 2012, the Supreme Court ruled the state isn't meeting its constitutional obligation to amply pay for basic education. The legislature added about $1 billion to education funding this year. A search team has rescued a California couple and their 23-foot motorhome from the mud of a southern Oregon logging road after the couple followed GPS instructions and got stuck 2 days ago. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office says 73-year-old Charles Garden of Ridgecrest, California, called Saturday night to report he was stuck behind fallen trees and about 4 miles short of Oregon 42, the highway leading to his destination on the Oregon coast, Coos Bay. He'd left Interstate 5 north of Grant Pass and struck off northwest on U.S. Bureau of Land Management roads. The sheriff's office said the man and his wife had provisions and the heat from the vehicle, which they wouldn't leave. A tow truck couldn't get them out on Sunday, but a search and rescue team succeeded yesterday in winching them free. Portland officials say a military plane with 17 people aboard landed safely at Portland International Airport after reporting a problem during flight. No one was hurt. The Oregonian says Portland Fire and Rescue spokesman Lieutenant Rich Chapman reports a Dornier 328 turboprop plane indicated late Monday afternoon it was having hydraulic failure relating to its brakes. Port of Portland spokesman Steve Johnson says the plane landed about 5:30 p.m., about an hour after the problem was reported. Neither man knew the branch of the military involved or the plane's flight path. A rare tornado damaged industrial buildings south of Seattle yesterday morning as an early winter storm dumped record amounts of rain and knocked out power for thousands in the Pacific Northwest. The tornado hit the industrial area of Fredrickson, tearing a hole in the roof of a Northwest door factory, blowing out car windows at a nearby Boeing factory, and damaging a building where sections of a downtown Seattle tunnel project were being assembled. A team from the Weather Service office in Seattle confirmed the tornado from eyewitness accounts. The damage included a jagged 40 by 40 foot hole in the roof at Northwest Door. There were no injuries. With yesterday's precipitation still to be added, it's been the wettest September on record in Olympia and the second wettest in Seattle. Before legal marijuana in Washington hits store shelves, it will have to be tested. Special pot labs will check for potency, molds, foreign matter, and bacteria like E. coli. It's a key part of the recreational marijuana market approved by Washington voters last fall. But setting the standards for how to lab test pot turns out to be pretty complicated. And now some lab managers worry they won't be ready in time. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins explains.
At Analytical 360 Lab in Seattle, Caitlin Reese breaks the seal on a small, clear package of goldfish-shaped crackers. They look just like the ones my kids and I love to eat, but they're not. The crackers she's pureeing in a grinder are cannabis-infused goldfish called Purple Haze. Reese's job is to test their potency.
Nice, homogenized sample to do the test.
Reese says crackers and gummy candies are common cannabis-infused products. The strangest food she's ever tested?
I think one time we had tomato bisque soup with cornbread, and I think it came out pretty potent.
Analytical 360 currently tests pot and pot products for the largely self-regulated medical cannabis market. But the lab's chief science officer, Randall Oliver, has high hopes for the future. He wants his testing team to play a big role in Washington's new recreational marijuana experiment. The problem, he says, time is running out.
We need time to prepare. We need a few months to get this all up and running.
Pot stores could open in Washington as early as next spring. Oliver says the state still hasn't told him what his lab will need to do to get certified.
We're up against the wall, and we need to know what's going on as far as what methods we're going to use and what tests are going to be required.
At Washington's Liquor Control Board, Deputy Director Randy Simmons acknowledges the lab testing piece is taking longer than they had hoped.
Oh, I think we would have liked to have had it all done by this point in time.
Simmons says the biggest challenge has been developing a reliable test for measuring THC levels in marijuana, the one test Washington's new law requires.
There's been a lot of examples of the same plant going to various labs and getting different THC results.
The man working on a solution to that problem is Roy Upton. He's with a California nonprofit called the American Herbal Pharmacopoeia. Upton is basically writing the recipe book for pot labs to follow when testing cannabis. He, too, acknowledges it's taking longer than he had hoped.
Oh, way longer, yeah.
Upton says it's not easy to nail down lab protocols. He calls it a recipe that produce accurate and consistent lab results each and every time.
If you find that some step in the recipe is not optimal, then you have to tweak. And yes, that's what we've been doing this whole time.
Upton hopes to have the recipe book, called a monograph, finished in the next 6 to 8 weeks. Washington's draft rules for legal marijuana also call for pot-infused foods to be tested, both for potency and microbiological contaminants. But the Liquor Board's Randy Simmons says no one's even begun to write those standards.
That will not be done by the time we get the stores open.
Still, Simmons says there are other ways to ensure marijuana-laced foods are safe.
The extract going into the edibles is safe because that will have been tested. And then the food manufacturing process is safe. So if the two pieces are safe, the assumption right now is that the food product itself would be safe.
Simmons says he's confident there's still time to create the lab testing infrastructure for legal recreational pot in Washington. But at Analytical 360, Randall Oliver says his lab is in limbo over what equipment to buy, how many new employees to hire, and what training to give them. I'm Austin Jenkins reporting.
Still ahead, we've all heard of history reenactors, people who take great pains to live life, if only for a weekend, as they would have done in an earlier time. Recently, a group gathered in Oregon to revisit the history of the Oregon Trail.
You have to understand that these people, they laid everything on the line to go 2,000 miles, and you've got to come and you got to stake out the claim, and then you got to prove it up, and then you have to make your life here.
But this group has a different spin on history. They experienced the trials of the trail through group participation in a video game. Dina Pritchep explores the Oregon Trail, the video game. That story coming up at 9:24. The time is now 9:22. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Today, showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Highs near 56 degrees with west-southwest winds 8 to 11 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation today 100% with new rainfall amounts between a quarter and half an inch possible. Tonight, more showers likely, mainly after 11 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with lows in the mid-40s. South winds 3 to 8 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation tonight 70% with new rainfall amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch possible. Tomorrow, again, showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Highs remain in the mid-50s with light south winds becoming southwest 5 to 9 miles per hour in the afternoon. The chance of precipitation tomorrow, 100%. Then on Thursday, partly sunny. Highs near 60 with calm winds. Friday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid-60s. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says a few more showers and thunderstorms are possible today, then scattered showers tomorrow, slowly diminishing as high pressure builds in tomorrow night. Thursday and Friday should be partly sunny, highs back in the mid-60s, but the long-range models suggest another rainy weekend is coming. Now in local news, over 200 people are expected to attend the Oregon Main Street Annual Conference to be held in Astoria tomorrow through Friday. The conference will hold workshops on the best practices for downtown revitalization. Astoria, which exemplifies the conference theme, Cool Cities, Old Buildings, New Attitudes, will showcase its historic buildings, numerous shopping and dining opportunities, and community activities. The Astoria Downtown Historic District Association is a participant in the Oregon Main Street program and is encouraging downtown business owners, property owners, and those interested in downtown revitalization to attend the conference. Admission is free to Astorians, but registration is required. For conference and registration information, visit OregonHeritage.org on the web or contact Elena Garner, the Downtown Historic District Association Executive Director, at 503-791-7940. And that number and web information is up on our website, CoastRadio.org. Just click the news button on our homepage. We're used to hearing about historical reenactors. Civil War enthusiasts descend on Fort Stevens every summer to wear scratchy woolen war costumes and fire off cannon. On a recent weekend, a different group of reenactors gathered to bring life to the Oregon Trail, that 2,000-mile route from the Missouri River to the Great Northwest. But instead of going back to the 19th century, this group took its inspiration from a more recent era. Dina Pritchip explains.
In 1972, Don Rowich was working as a student teacher, and he faced the challenge of teaching his class about westward expansion.
Back at that time, students learned history by reading big, thick history textbooks, and that has limitations.
So like those early pioneers, Rowich decided to strike out from familiar territory. He left the textbook behind and forged a new path. The Oregon Trail, the video game.
It maybe was the first application that puts you into a story. So you're not viewing pioneers traveling the Oregon Trail from high above the scene. You're right in the middle of the scene.
And on a recent Saturday at Salem's Willamette Heritage Center, more than 50 people found themselves right in the middle of the scene in a whole new way. The Oregon Trail Live, taking video game edutainment into the real world.
I knew that the 11-year-old version of me would be angry if I missed this opportunity, so here I am. Oh, the trail's starting.
Many of the people here, like Shelley Bowers, grew up playing Rowich's game. They've driven in from all over Oregon and Washington to reenact it. They're dressed in bonnets and fake mustaches. And some, like Jason Leroy, have homemade t-shirts with quotes from the game.
It says, you have died of dysentery.
In 1980s computer font. And with a whip crack, the teams are off.
Westward ho!
Woo! Players earn points by reenacting challenges from the game. In a fashion. Like the original pioneers, teams have to ford the rapids, which turn out to be roller derby girls whacking them with blue foam pool noodles. And to emphasize the real danger of the trail, team members bury their dead, which are paper dolls, in a sandbox.
Oh, Brother Scott, you are a man of steel.
Writer Kelly Williams Brown came up with the event last year when she was working as a reporter for the Salem Statesman Journal. Like many 20-somethings, she grew up on the game.
I remember when Facebook first started, the most popular group was, "I tried to ford the river, but my effing oxen died." And the fact that an in-joke from a computer game from 15 years ago would command that sort of loyalty made me think, well, there's an opportunity to do something really fun here.
Of course, the real Oregon Trail didn't make you try to float your wagon in a plastic kiddie pool.
Are you gonna try and sink it?
Shut up, sink our wagon!
But Sam Wegner, the Willamette Heritage Center's director, says that unexpected challenges were part of the journey.
You have to understand that these people, they laid everything on the line to go 2,000 miles. And you've got to come and you got to stake out the claim, and then you got to prove it up, and then you have to make your life here.
And as teams work toward their mock homesteads and the rain rolls in, it's clear the pioneering spirit is still strong, even in the celebration of an old video game.
You know, that's the hardy stock that's right here, right now. That's what makes us the Great Northwest.
I'm Dina Pritchup, reporting.
That's all for today's edition of The Bridge. Join us again Thursday morning at 9:30 for more local and regional Northwest stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.